With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Jay. I'm editor and founder of the Eagles Beak, a Palace fan site by fans for fans. You can get us on all the socials at the Eagles Beak, and I'm also producer and presenter of a local community radio show, sports radio show even, which you can get online, and you can get us on socials at the Meridian SS.
Hi, I'm Jake, Newcastle fan. You get me on Twitter at JakeJapper with two N's.
Hi, Gita Llewellyn, Swansea City fan and columnist. You can find me on Twitter at Gita Llewellyn. You can also listen to the Jackcast, the Swansea City podcast, at the Jackcast on Twitter.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining me today, guys, especially Gito, who unfortunately is not here because Swansea have suddenly been promoted in the middle of a season. But we felt since we were talking FA Cup, it would be great to have him back on. But that's not where we're going to start first. First, I'm going to start off with an apology. We didn't end up having shows either of the last 2 weeks, which was not the plan, but we are sorry for abandoning you. So I figured we'd at least get caught up first on what happened in the Premier League over the congested holiday period, now that we're mostly past it and into kind of the cup and league interchange at this point. But I just wanted to start off with who you guys thought were the biggest winners or losers in the Premier League over that holiday period.
Good question. Interesting one, isn't it? I think City are probably the biggest winners, the way they've continued to pick up points as they were. But I think it's been a really interesting period in the world of Premier League because I think the biggest stories are the postponements and the moaning from certain managers, the COVID protocols in place and everything else. To be honest, I just wish I'd get on with it without the moaning side. It's getting a bit tedious now. I think the losers at the moment are the teams that are struggling with cancelled games. And that's kind of twofold, really, because the likes of Burnley, I don't think Burnley applied to have any of their games postponed. I think it was just their opponents all the time they were unluckily due to face were having obviously COVID issues. So Burnley are quite a way behind in the games played stakes. So it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because they've got to make up those games at some point. Obviously, they're out of the FA Cup, so that helps them. But obviously, may not kind of work out in terms of their opponents as well. So they've got to find gaps in a schedule, which is already a tight schedule. I mean, we're looking at a season where we're heading into a summer before a winter World Cup. So, you know, there's obviously pressures on the FA to make sure that games are played and the season's finished at the right time, so that there is a good enough summer, because obviously everything's being condensed and obviously we're having a break next winter, which, you know, everything is it's already complicated, isn't it? But I think there's too many games being called off. We're going into a different area now, but I've just read that Everton and Leicester have just had their game called off on Tuesday, even though Leicester played in the FA Cup yesterday. I haven't read the details. It's only just breaking news as we're recording the pod. So that's an intriguing one. And it annoys me a little bit because two of their players have seen it at darts last weekend. So, you know, you've got to help yourselves out, really, haven't you? But I think it's a really hot topic in the Premier League at the moment because a lot of managers are having a fair amount to say in the whole situation. You know, some of the more successful teams are once again moaning that they're playing too much football at this time of year, which, you know, maybe if you weren't in Champions League, then you wouldn't have to play so many games. It's kind of a little bit like that, in my opinion. But I think the complications you've got are, you know, long COVID issues. You know, if players are going down with COVID, then, you know, it's an illness or a disease, or it's a disease that actually affects your, you know, it affects people through tiredness, and, you know, long COVID is a known thing. So, you know, there's a lot of side issues around this whole thing. like I said, I've got a bit sidetracked with the whole COVID thing, but that's been the topic of the last few weeks, really. You know, we've postponed games left, right and centre. And there's been no real clarification from the Premier League about, you know, which players have COVID, which players are injured, how many players these teams are having, not available because of postponed games, stuff like that. So it's all a little bit unseemly in a way. And it's kind of a little bit done under the carpet a little bit, it feels like, for a lot of these clubs. But, you know, the show goes on. And for most clubs, it is business as usual. And like I mentioned, I think City have been very impressive during this period. They've got themselves clear at the top of the table and look very much like the ones to beat this season, which is kind of how I thought it might happen as the season went on. The losers, I think, are the teams like Burnley and Watford that have games left to play, and they've got to try and fit them in at certain points. But it's been a very difficult few weeks, actually, in the Premier League and in football in general. It's not just Premier League; it affects it. You know, it's affecting all the divisions, and you know, it's something that we've got to acclimatise to. But there does need to be a fairer way of doing things, I think, at the moment. It just seems to be who shouts loudest at the moment seems to be the case. But yeah, it's proving to be an interesting season for more reasons than one.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Jay has said. The stuff about the postponed games is tough, and I definitely think that some teams are taking advantage of that more than others. But if the Premier League are letting them do that, I don't think the clubs can be blamed. It's really down to the Premier League. But in terms of the winners, yeah, City, they've pretty much won the league now. You'd be surprised if Liverpool or Chelsea got close to them. Probably say Tottenham have done well over this period. They've won a few games. Manchester United and Arsenal have dropped points. West Ham have two. And I think if Tottenham win their two games of hand, they go in the top four. So you'd say they've had quite a good little festive period, considering they started off with the COVID issues right back at the very start and the closing their training ground. So yeah, they've had a good period. I think maybe Brentford have done quite well. They sort of pulled away from the bottom three again. They've got a 12-point gap now. It's difficult to see them being involved in the relegation fight, even if they did collapse severely over the second half of the season, which I think is possible. I definitely think that they're a team that is going to have a worse second half of the season, but they've put enough space in between them. They got a good win against Everton. Wasn't it Villa as well they beat? So yeah, they've had quite a good little period. And to be honest, I'd say Newcastle have had quite a good little period in just the fact that Watford and Burnley are so close to them. So, you know, if we beat Watford next week, we go out of the bottom three. So if you'd have said that, if you'd have offered Eddie Howe that and the new owners that when they'd have taken over, they probably both would have taken it. So even though our results haven't been good, we've had a few cancellations. We got destroyed by Manchester City and we got well beaten by Liverpool. We're still well in the sort of in touching distance. So despite the embarrassment of yesterday, you'd maybe look at what Newcastle are going to do this month and the fact that Watford and Burnley don't seem to be making up any ground. I know they've got, I think Watford have got two games down and Burnley have got one. Vice versa. Sorry, I think Burnley have got two games down and Watford have got one. So, you know, and at the bottom of the table, it's points on the board that matter more than games in hand because they're at the bottom for a reason. I don't really see Burnley or Watford winning many games now between now and the end of the season. Probably likewise Newcastle, but the fact that we are in it, I think it's probably a good thing for us going into this month and makes it a little bit easier to get some new players in. So, they're the main ones for me in sort of had a bad festive period. You've got to say Manchester United. It's not just the result, you know, drawing to Newcastle and then losing to Wolves. It's been the performances too. They've looked really, really bad. They don't really look like they've improved at all under Ragnik, which is a little bit surprising, but then maybe not if you look at his coaching resume. He's not really had a big job like this before, and maybe the players are sort of struggling to really put the trust in him to implement his ideas. They've looked really, really bad. They were bad against Newcastle. We should have won that game. We had the better chances and they got a scruffy equaliser. But then against Wolves, they barely even threatened the goal. It was really, really bad. And yeah, I think they're a long way from finishing in the top four. And you'd say they might not even finish in the top six at this rate.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to argue that Manchester City were the big winners of this period. I mean, they won all their games Chelsea and Liverpool drop points, it's going to take a heck of a collapse now for them not to win the Premier League. And knowing the way Guardiola, you know, orchestrates these league title pushes, you just can't see it happening. So it's been absolutely ideal from a Man City point of view. And if you actually look below them, I think the teams that have had good festive periods are few and far between, largely because of the postponements. I mean, there's a few clubs there that you can say have had kind of indifferent ones. Some have had really bad ones. I think Burnley are prime candidate for that, despite only playing two games. I mean, to lose one of those against Leeds is a heck of a a heck of a bad result for them, considering they've still got this major fixture pileup to come, for example. But if we're looking for other teams who haven't had bad festive periods, I don't actually think Arsenal have had a bad one. I think they've climbed up the table to a point now where they've you can say that they are genuine top four contenders. They've had some, you know, quite emphatic wins during that period. And even the one defeat they had against Manchester City, the performance was probably the most encouraging performance I've seen from an Arsenal side against one of, you know, the title challenges in a long time. They actually did turn up, and okay, they didn't get the result in the end, but there was a lot of there were a lot of encouraging signs there. Other than that, I think Wolves have had a good festive period despite not playing that many. You know, they've had some good results. The win at Old Trafford, the headline there, and they're now in a position where you can say actually they're just outside that top six, trying to sneak in there. It's similar really kind of profile to West Ham by now, I would say. So I think they've just quietly snuck in under the radar, Wolves. They've just gone about their job. They don't lose many games. And by now, I think you can say actually Wolves are quite an interesting team to look at, despite not being the kind of team that's going to, you know, hit the back pages too often. They're not going to write too many headlines for themselves. They've just quietly gone about their business, and that they've kept on doing it over Christmas. And that's why they're in a pretty good position in the league right now.
Yeah, I think you guys have all made some really good points, both with the teams on the pitch and Jay with your point about the COVID situation, which I am not getting into again, but absolutely was a factor over these December fixtures. And usually by now we would have had the show where we talk about how every team has played 19 matches, and then we go through who we think is favorites for the title and top four and relegation and all those things. But still a lot of clubs not quite there at the halfway point of their seasons with so many of these delays. Let's go into the FA Cup now. Gitto kind of mentioned Arsenal there, who we may hear from pretty quickly. But what did you guys think were the biggest upsets in this third round of the FA Cup?
It was, I mean, I think the first things first, it's great to see fans being back, particularly for the FA Cup, because it is a competition that lives off the back of the fans being at games. And I think it was very noticeable this weekend, particularly at the likes of, you know, games featuring Boreham Wood and Kidderminster and that kind of thing. I feel sorry for the teams that non-league teams that actually did well in the last couple of seasons without fans being there. But yeah, it's neither here nor there. I thought it was very noticeable this year for the third round that we had that. I think there's a lot of enjoyable games this week. I think it's great to see the Giant Killers back, you know, in the FA Cup, and the likes of Boreham Wood, Kidderminster, Hartlepool to a lesser extent as well. It just proves what the FA Cup does that no other competition can do. You know, it's one of those competitions in world football which I think a lot of other countries are very envious of. I mean, you know, how many other countries can you say that take, what, 6,000 fans to Chelsea, you know, for a Chesterfield who are non-league? You know, that, I mean, that's just incredible. And yes, you could say people jump on the bandwagon, but Chesterfield were a league club in their own right, you know, for a number of years before they dropped down to non-league. But, you know, even so, you know, taking 6,000 fans to the European champions is, for a non-league side is absolutely tremendous, to be honest, and just shows what, you know, what love the FA Cup has. I mean, this is, what is it, the 150th season of the FA Cup. It's something to celebrate. And I think we've had no end of entertainment, this weekend for sure. Obviously, stepping to one side from my club, there's been a lot of enjoyable games. I mean, I think To a lesser extent, it's probably a fixture that not many people looked at as an entertaining game. But Barrow visiting Barnsley, that turned out to be an absolute cracker. Ending up 5-4 after extra time. I mean, Barrow had a guy sent off, fought back, and they were 4-4 at some stage. And I thought, you know, watching the highlights of that yesterday, you know, that was very much an underrated game when you look at the highlights. It, you know, they kind of just showed the goals on TV last night, but actually, yeah, that probably deserved a good 10-15 minutes of highlights, because it was that entertaining. If Bournemouth beating Wimbledon, I mean, that was brilliant to see. Kidderminster is probably the result of the round. Winning their game and obviously getting through to the fourth round. I think they're the lowest ranked side, Kidderminster, in the competition, which is which is great to see. Obviously Burnley, you know, being knocked out yesterday, early doors yesterday by Huddersfield. I mean, Huddersfield doing well in the Championship at the moment, but, you know, it's still there as a giant killing. I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because, you know, how do you define a giant killing? Obviously by name, by division, that kind of thing. But, you know, every team in this competition seems to have a different approach to it. Palace played a pretty strong side out yesterday, you know, from what they could have done, other than a reserve keeper. But, you know, every Premier League team seems to be doing something different. You've only got to look at likes of Liverpool and City, and there are different reasons this year, you know, for those changes. And we've already mentioned those in the pod already. But I thought it was a really entertaining third round this year. I really enjoyed it. And I think the fans being at games was a huge part of that. I think we really missed that in the FA Cup. You know, we missed it in football completely anyway, but I think the FA Cup, you know, lives off the back of fans being at games, and particularly for the likes of Bournemouth and Kidderminster. I thought those two games in particular were excellent to watch, and really proves the magic of the FA Cup is still there.
Yeah, I mean, Jay has spoken for a long time that not mentioned Cambridge beating Newcastle, so I don't know if he was leaving that for me to discuss.
I was leaving it.
He just doesn't think that's a threat. He just doesn't think that's a shock, which again, I wouldn't argue with. So, but yeah, that's quite a big one. I did watch that game, and it was exactly how you'd expect it to have gone when you saw the scoreline. In the first half, Newcastle created tons of chances. Should have scored. Didn't score. Weren't playing with a striker, so that didn't really help. And then they got sort of a scrappy goal, had like a 5-minute VAR check that got given. And then from that point on, it was a team that has won once all season, who's not used to playing against a team that sit behind the ball, and they didn't know what to do. And the confidence just drained. And yeah, as soon as the goal went in, it we were never likely to equalise. It was just, they definitely look like a team that has no confidence whatsoever, which is why there's going to be a lot of players coming in this month, because there's no way that group of players can stay in the Premier League. But yeah, that was quite a big surprise, I guess. But, you know, if you would have picked out potential cup shocks prior to the weekend, you probably would have earmarked that one. So I'm not sure. You know, it is big, but yeah, it wasn't the most surprising. The Kidderminster one was obviously the gap between divisions, but I think Reading played a weakened team, and I don't think that Reading will be too upset of going out of the cup, even though, you know, it's a little bit embarrassing if they go on and win a couple in the league, it'll quickly get forgotten about. So yeah, that was a shock. You know, Arsenal lose to Nottingham Forest. There's only one division between the teams, and it happened a few years ago as well, but it is a surprise. You know, it's a surprise when anybody in the Premier League beats one of the top six teams, so for a lower division team to do it, and for Arsenal to put a quite strong team as well, that was a shock. And I thought Forest played really well and were deserving of it. They've been a team transformed since Steve Cooper took over. I'm sure Ghetto will talk a little bit more about that, as he'll be more informed about Cooper than I am. But yeah, they played really well, and I think it's been a continuation of what they've been doing in the league. For Arsenal, I think it's quite a disappointment to go out at this stage. You know, they don't have European competition. They're still in the EFL Cup, but they're playing Liverpool in the semi-final, so I don't know how that one's going to go. You know, you'd have thought that they'd have been targeting this for a real cup run, and to go out the third round is a little bit disappointing. Although if they go on to finish in the top four or win the EFL Cup, I guess they're not going to be too disappointed. But yeah, they're the big ones, I think. Has been a really good weekend of football. Even, you know, for Tottenham and Liverpool both to go 1-0 down today, it does adds a little bit of extra needle to the weekend. So yeah, it was definitely a good weekend of football, which I'm sure I would have enjoyed more if my team didn't come cropper to one of the shock results, but there we go.
Yeah, I agree. I thought I've loved this weekend. I've absolutely loved it more than I've loved a third round weekend for quite some time. And that's despite my club failing to make it through to the fourth round. And that's because there have been some great shocks and there've been some great games. I mean, Jay there spoke about Barrow going away to Barnsley, going down to 10 men, going 2-0 down and then taking the game to extra time with a 4-4. You know, I mean, I was just listening to that game in the car on the way over to my brother's house yesterday. And I was like, what is going on? It's just the FA Cup at its insane best, basically. It's just a shame that Barrow couldn't complete what would have been an absolutely incredible scalp had they beaten Barnsley with 10 men. But I mean, you know, you guys have talked about the other shocks. Kidderminster against Reading, I agree with Jake, is a shock, obviously. It's probably not as big a shock as it's kind of been made out because Reading made a lot of changes for that game. And they put Rafael Cabral in goals, which is basically a defeat waiting to happen. He is just a walking blunder by this stage in his career. So it's obviously a great achievement for Kidderminster, but Reading did give them a lot of help with that team selection. I think that's the thing when you're judging upsets in the FA Cup. You have to look at how both teams have taken it. And sometimes you see teams not take it seriously and they're almost begging to be kicked out. And you think, well, that's not quite the same. And that's why I think Newcastle, sorry, Jake, I'm going to have to go there. This is why I think Newcastle is the shock of the weekend, because Newcastle really did treat this game seriously. They did pick a strong side and they were playing against Cambridge United, two divisions below them, you know, at home at St. James's Park in front of a packed crowd who seemed like they were, you know, hoping that this would be a rare win for their side this season. And, you know, to lose that one, I mean, it's just an incredible result for Cambridge. Absolutely fantastic for them. And one of the best things about it is the name of the scorer, Joe Ironside, sounds like an FA Cup third round hero from 1952. It's just, you expect that name to be spoken about on a Pathé newsreel. You know, it's very old school as a footballer's name. But I mean, it's just brilliant. The one thing I will say is that in hindsight, Eddie Howe and Newcastle United is a match made in FA Cup hell. I like Eddie Howe, but his cup record is appallingly bad. I think he's now won one of his last seven FA Cup matches as a manager, which is really awful, considering a lot of those games have been against lower league opposition as well. So I think Newcastle losing to Cambridge is the shock of the round. I think that's a heck of a result. Nottingham Forest beating Arsenal, like you said, is really, really commendable. Forest are in fantastic form, but so were Arsenal. And you would have thought that they would have seen this as a competition worth taking seriously this year. And I didn't watch the match, but it seems like Forest gave them a really good game and it wasn't just a snatch and grab. And the other one that Jay touched on, which I think needs to, deserves a bit more credit than it's received, really, is Hartlepool's win over Blackpool, because Blackpool have been pretty good this season. They've not been, their form has taken a little bit of a dip recently, but they picked a strong team to play against Hartlepool. And, for them to come from behind and win 2-1, and an 18-year-old, I think, got the winner. I mean, that's brilliant. That's pure FA Cup. It's absolutely fantastic. And just because it's not a Premier League side that's at the wrong end of that scalp, it doesn't make it any less of an impressive result. And I think Hartlepool deserve a heck of a lot of credit for it.
Yeah, I think you guys have pretty pretty well covered all of the different options here, and also mentioned some of the clubs that you were pretty impressed by. And there were a lot of really interesting performances and storylines obviously coming out of it. And I'm personally just delighted that Tottenham didn't have to be mentioned in this segment, which it looked like they were going to be in about the 75th minute. How did your individual clubs approach the match? Obviously, Jake touched on his a little bit already. Jay, I know for you, playing Millwall, not a beloved fan base for you, and obviously some nasty behavior during that match, which maybe not as much of a shock as we'd like it to be. But what did you make of that one and your approach to it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time we've had a South London derby. I mean, you know, much is made of our rivalry with Brighton, but this game is a derby, a South London derby. There's 7 miles between us. You know, you have people that, you know, live next to Millwall fans, got Millwall fans in the family and vice versa, Palace, Millwall. So it is one of those true derby games. And to be drawn in the FA Cup is something special. There's no love lost between either team, as you probably saw from live coverage yesterday. But yeah, it's it was an intriguing game, to be quite honest. I'm trying not to touch on the goings on off the pitch because I've said enough on social media, which is probably enough. So if anybody wants to check out, then just follow us on socials because I've had my say and I'm trying to keep quiet now. on the pitch, yeah, I mean, Palace, this is our first game without our players that have gone to the African Cup of Nations. So no Wilfried Zaha, no Jordan Ayew and no Cheku Kouyaté. And I think, to be honest, it says an awful lot that we're going to miss Jordan Ayew and Kouyaté a lot more than Wilf over the coming weeks. I hope that doesn't bite me on the backside, but I think that's probably a lot of Palace fans will agree with me there because Jordan's been fantastic in recent weeks, as Kouyaté, who's been brilliant in the midfield. So it was a bit of an interesting one to see how we're going to set up yesterday, but we played a strong side. To be honest, Jack Butland is our cup goalkeeper. I don't know how much longer that's going to be after his absolute howler in the first half, which, to be honest, the atmosphere was red hot yesterday, the first half, and you know that just gave Millwall every encouragement for that first half, really, in a first half that, you know, we were pretty poor and we could have been. I mean, to be honest, Butland didn't have much else to do the rest of the game. He had a couple of pretty straightforward saves to make, but, you know, he still had to make them after making an absolute howler. So, yeah, fair play to him for that. But I think our best response was to score straight after the half-time before everybody got back in their seats, and that just killed any atmosphere that, you know, Millwall had in that first half, which was the perfect way to do it. I have to say, Michael Olise is just out of this world, this player. I mean, that's his third start for us so far. Patrick Vieira is doing exactly the right thing, breaking him in gently. He knew Wilf was going to go off the African Cup of Nations for January. This is his chance. And to be honest, he's taken every chance he's been given so far off the bench. You know, he's come on, influenced games from the bench. I think that's his third goal he scored for us. And what a goal. I mean, cutting inside. I mean, to be honest, you know, no disrespect to the Millwall fullback, but actually, you know, allowing him to cut inside to do what he still had to do that, to do what he did and curl it into the far corner. And that was just sublime to see a player take on a fullback and actually cut inside and do that. You know, it's really, really exciting to see him. Yeah, certainly after the back of getting Eze in the club, and obviously Eze is trying to come back after this horrible injury that he has, so he needs to, you know, a bit more time to get back to where he was. But having Eze have a season he did last season, and then we've got the excitement of Michael Olise now as well, which is it's just incredible to see a player who's at such a young age, cost us very little, and you know, can do what he does. He's going to be an absolute star, and you know, his influence continued in the game. He set up the winner for Mateta, who just had to get his head on it, basically. I mean, you know, that it was a perfect ball for a very tall striker up front. And and to be honest, I mean Millwall did, you know, put the pressure on us as the game went on in the second half, but you could question Patrick Vieira's changes as the game went on, because it kind of changed our formation a little bit and didn't really help us, kind of put us on the back foot a little bit, but we got through it, you know. And to be honest, I think the guys would agree that a performance doesn't really matter in the FA Cup. It's getting through, getting the win, getting to the next round, and that's where we are, which is really good. I don't think we've got through to the next round for the last 3 years, and we haven't scored a goal in the FA Cup for 3 years. So to get two and to knock out our local rivals out of the cup is great. I know it turned out to be really good in the end, and we'll take that performance. You know, not worried about that too much. And we're in the fourth round, so that's all we can ask for.
Yeah, I mean, Ghetto is right. We did try to win the game. We did put out quite a strong team. Trippier made his debut. He was probably the only player to play well. He did sort of show why he's instantly going to be one of our best players. So that was a positive. But yeah, the rest of it was really disappointing. You know, I think the problem Eddie Howe had was that we didn't have any strikers on the pitch, and there was nobody trying to get into central areas, which isn't great when you're then chasing the game. I think in the first half we had a few chances. Jacob Murphy, I think, had three or four really good chances. Scored a goal that got disallowed just before Cambridge scored as well. He was probably our biggest threat, and then he got taken off at 60 minutes, which was puzzling, really, because he was definitely the one that looked most likely to score. And then when he was taken off, it just got really blunt, and I just think that the lack of confidence in that squad was just so evident. Nobody really wanted to take the shot on. Nobody wanted to, you know, try and beat an opposition defender. It was just loads of crosses into the box. When you're not playing with any sort of striker, it's not going to do anything, especially against the League One defence, which defending aerial balls into the box is their bread and butter at the end of the day. So it was questionable from Eddie Howe, the decision to take off Murphy. Probably even more questionable to sort of keep putting balls into the box when it was evident it wasn't working. I think we had the non-executive chairman, as he's called, from the PIF was in the stadium. So apparently he went down to the dressing room after the match, which is, you know, people who have thoughts about the Saudi Arabians will have their thoughts on what that possibly could have entailed. But yeah, it was, I'm sure him watching that and the rest of the ownership watching that, it was just a stark reminder of what needs to get done this month. We need players all over the pitch. I don't think there's a single position where we couldn't be strengthened quite easily. It's got really bad at Newcastle. It's just got so stale over the last couple of years that we've just got players that we've given new contract after new contract after new contract that just seem to be just going through the motions. I think it's such a unique situation that you could see on that pitch yesterday that maybe there were some of those players that know they're going to be replaced and weren't quite as committed as you'd expect them to be. There was a few that the body language wasn't good. I think at the end of the match, I think four or five went straight down the tunnel, which, you know, if you've sold out the stadium and you've then lost to a League One team, you should at least go and, you know, face up, you know, show your appreciation to the fans. I think there was quite a few journalists saying that Trippier was shouting at them to come back. So he's already showing the sort of role he's taken on in that dressing room. And if he didn't know the job ahead of him and the rest of the new signings with this squad, I think he will know now. And it is going to be a huge task. Eddie Howe is still early. I don't think he deserves too much criticism at the moment for the job he's doing. I think that this squad of players is so bad, it's just awful, that he always needed to get into January and bring in some players. Yesterday, the decision to take off Murphy was a little bit questionable, but I don't think it's probably the worst thing that we went out of the cup. And if we then, next week, if we go and beat Watford and we move out of the bottom three, I don't think any Newcastle fan is particularly going to care about losing to Cambridge this week. So yeah, there's a lot of fans saying that they want apologies from players and managers. I don't really want to see an apology from them. I just want them to go and beat Watford next week, and then that will be fine with me. So hopefully they do that. But yeah, it was a bad afternoon. Not the worst afternoon we've had in the FA Cup in the last 10 years, but it is up there. I think a few years ago, I think under Alan Pardew, we lost 3-1 away to Stevenage, who were in League Two at the time, and that was very bad. But yeah, this isn't the worst, but it was a sorry tale. It's always darkest before the dawn, as they keep saying, but it does seem with Newcastle, we keep thinking it's going to improve, and it's, you know, we had the ownership change, it didn't really improve. We had the manager, we sacked Steve Bruce, it didn't really improve. We brought in Eddie Howe, it didn't really improve. We've signed Trippier, it's not really improved. You know, when is it going to improve? That's the question. Hopefully soon. Hopefully next week against Watford. Hopefully they'll bring in two or three new players this week, as seem to be the rumours, and we can slowly move on from the Mike Ashley era. But I think it's going to be a painful two or three years trying to get rid of some of these players that are on huge wages, who I don't think any other team are going to want. It's going to be a painful transition period, but hopefully we will get there. But yeah, it was bad. We tried to win. We didn't win. We got embarrassed. Let's just move on.
From Swansea's point of view, this was a bit of a weird one, really, because we hadn't played since December 11th. We, along with Luton, Bristol Rovers and Port Vale, have been on the longest run without playing a game prior to yesterday's fixture. And we came up against Southampton, who are a Premier League team, doing reasonably well at the moment, 10 points clear of the relegation zone. So they clearly prioritise the league, and they prioritise the cup a bit more than some other Premier League clubs would. and they picked a reasonably strong team to play against the Swans. And we expected the Swans to do likewise because we hadn't played for a month, basically. So our players desperately needed the minutes to get back into back up to match fitness. But it was a bit of a mix and match of a team. There were, you know, it was half and half really. And we played this experimental 4-3-3 formation with three out and out strikers up front. I wouldn't say it worked particularly well. It certainly didn't work in the first half hour when Southampton absolutely outclassed us. They absolutely destroyed us in that first 30 minutes. And it was just a blessing, really, that they only scored the one goal. But the game did change somewhat after half an hour when Jan Valeri got a second yellow card. And that evened up things a little bit more. But still, throughout the match, I just think Swansea looked like a team who hadn't played for a month. Everything was just that little bit slower. There were some really nice moments, but we struggled to create clear-cut chances. At least that was the case until we brought on Olivier Ncham in the second half, who gave us a bit more cutting edge in midfield. We got the equaliser through Joel Pirou, who had a very quiet game otherwise, but found an emphatic strike to take us to extra time. And we took the lead. And we thought at that stage, hey, there may be an upset on the cards here. But one of one of the growing themes of Swansea season is the fact that we concede very quickly now after scoring. We did it twice against Reading recently, and we did it against Southampton yesterday. We scored, and then within 60 seconds, Southampton had equalised, and then they went and scored the third, and we were too tired by that stage to do anything. But it was a bit of a weird one. I'm not going to read too much into it. There were some good things, a lot of bad things, but it's difficult to really judge it because we haven't been playing, because we made changes, because we were playing against a Premier League team, albeit one that was down to 10 men for most of the match. The one thing I will say is that every single time we play, we concede really soft goals. And that's the main issue we've had this season, is that the balance isn't there in defence. And we really struggle to transition from attack into defence. If we concede the ball, we are ripe for the opposition to tear us a new one. We give them so much space. And the fact that Shane Long scored the winner 5 years after he, I thought, retired from football speaks volumes, really, about the way we defended. It just, it's an area that needs a lot of work from our point of view, and we're still not finding any kind of system which works well in that respect. So it was just good from a Swansea point of view, if I'm being honest, to be back on the pitch. The players have got a few more minutes, and hoping it'll leave us a bit fresher going into the league match next week, because we've missed out on four league fixtures. We've got a heck of a congested schedule coming up, and we really could use a couple of points, because our form going into that break wasn't great either. So it wasn't a great day yesterday, but hopefully it'll give us the match practice that we need to start picking up points again in the league.
Gotcha. And yeah, it's weirdly difficult to play against Southampton, who have received a red card in the first 30 minutes of a match. We recently had to do that ourselves. And like you said, it did look optimistic there for a period. But yeah, conceding just too many goals in the end there, especially in that extra period. All right, now we'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right, and we are back. We'll start off this rounding the table segment by talking to Jay a little bit about Crystal Palace. We already kind of talked through your match, so I won't make you talk through all of that again. You do obviously have some key players missing out with AFCON, but you already mentioned a few players that could kind of fill in for them. Elise, like you mentioned, already fantastic. Mateta, amidst some transfer stuff, also getting on the score sheet there, but also now you have Eze coming back from his injury. I'm just curious what you think that kind of attacking front will look like over the next month or so.
Yeah, I think the Millwall game yesterday, we had a front three of Eze, Elise and Mateta, and those three haven't had any game time together as a front three. And I think that was part of our problem in the first half yesterday, in that, you know, they're still trying to find their feet, haven't had much game time, certainly in the first 11 at least. Elise is probably the only one off the bench. Mateta has had a bit of time as well. Eze, you know, he needs game time for sure after that horrific injury. So there's certainly no rushing him back. He will be broken in gently, but obviously with with Jordan Ayew missing and Wilf missing, who would certainly be starting these games, then, you know, those two in the prime position to fill those slots. As for Mateta, well, you know, this guy hasn't really looked like a footballer. But he scored a back heel against Brighton, and he scored against Millwall. So, you know, two of our rivals, he will go down as a bit of a cult hero if that's all he does at the club. To be quite honest, there's been a lot of conversation about him going somewhere else. Saint-Étienne is the rumour at the moment, but actually, you know, I think in the last couple of games he's actually shown a little bit. You know, particularly his game against Millwall yesterday, we certainly looked worse off when he went off yesterday. He certainly did, did a job in the 60 odd minutes he was on the pitch, and obviously scored a goal. So there's something about him that it's very similar to when we had Benteke. You know, in the first season he scored a lot of goals and we used him properly, and then for seasons after that, for whatever reason it was, we kind of stopped using him, playing into his strengths. You know, we kind of pass the ball to feet a lot too much. And instead of, you know, a big guy like Benteke, he's great with his head. You know, I'm not saying he's not very good with his feet, but actually, you know, put it at the edge of the 6-yard box, ping it in. You know, you've got the likes of Andros Townsend, Wilf Zaha to ping. But for some reason, we stopped playing to his strengths. And this is what we've got to do with Mateta. When he's on the pitch, you know, he's going to hold the ball up well. But, you know, ping it to him in a position where he can do that. You know, he's not particularly great with his feet. I would say Benteke is probably better with his feet than Mateta. But actually, we haven't seen an awful lot of him. He was very good at Mainz before he joined Palace last season. He scored about, I think he scored about 6 or 7 goals in about 10 games for Mainz. So, you know, he came with, you know, a lot of promise, still a young player. And you kind of think a lot of that at the start was to do with, you know, acclimatising to England and, you know, English football and that kind of stuff, because some players do struggle with that. But actually, yeah, I'd be disappointed if he goes, actually, in this window, unless, you know, we're looking elsewhere. There's rumours that we're looking at Nketiah at Arsenal, which I thought that was close to being a done deal, but he played for Arsenal today, which obviously cup ties him. Obviously not their worry now, but and more so ours if we do sign him. So that was a bit of a surprise to see him start for Arsenal, but sometimes his knees must a little bit, isn't it? So, but yeah, we've got the likes of, it was nice to see Jezrin Rexaki on the bench, a really highly rated youngster coming through the ranks who we're hoping is going to go places in the future. Really talented. Hopefully he will get some game time, even if it's off the bench, certainly during January at least anyway. Obviously Jack Wells Morrison as well was on the bench for us yesterday, which was good to see. The academy is producing some real talent at the moment, and obviously it's really positive. There's a lot of positive noise around the club at the moment since the opening of the academy, new training ground, and the money has been pumped into that. It's a real legacy of, you know, our 9 seasons in the Premier League, you know, that it is now a club record to be at this level for this long consistently. And we have a bit of a legacy behind us now, which is great to see. So hopefully, you know, there's a lot of talk around talent in and around South London, which we've lost out on. But actually, with the facility that we've now got in place, we'll attract some of these youngsters to Palace. You know, we've not done too badly in the past, but actually, you know, a lot of the names that have come out of South London, you know, haven't come through Palace. So hopefully we can be one of those clubs that you know, we don't end up suffering from the likes of Chelsea, Arsenal and Tottenham siphoning youngsters out of London, wherever it might be. You know, hopefully we'll get a bit more of a better pick on that. But I think with the likes of these three players at the African Cup of Nations, I was actually dreading it, looking at the calendar at the start of the season. But actually, the way it's panned out, I'm actually quite positive. You know, with the likes of Eze getting game time, Elisa yesterday, I mean, the step up was a bit of a concern from the Championship to, but actually he's taking it like a duck to water and actually getting him on the pitch for 90 minutes. I'm excited to see what he can do. And actually, you know, filling that void that Wilf will always leave for us. Actually, we can move away from. It's a bit of a dying argument now. Actually, you know, Palace not winning without Wilf. You know, we've managed it a few times now. So it did come up a few times yesterday, but actually, it's an old one now, which is good. And actually, this is the future of Palace. You know, think about it. Wilf's 29 now. Whether or not he moves on, or you know, he's going to start fading at some point. Like I say, whether he moves on or not, or if he stays at the club, then great. But actually, we've got some future coming through. And actually, you know, getting Elise for $8 million from Reading, I mean, that was just stunning business. It really was stunning business. And the guy is confident, and I think it says a lot. When he scored that equaliser, didn't celebrate, wanted to get back and kick off again, you know, to get the game going. You know, he just wants to get on with it, and it's similar to the goals he scored, actually, the two goals he scored in the Premier League this season. He hasn't scored a winning goal yet, but obviously he contributed to that one yesterday in the FA Cup. So yeah, I think the future's looking bright for us. I think we do have to be a bit careful, because obviously I think on the flip side of the African Cup of Nations taking place right now, obviously a lot of clubs have players at this competition with the complications of COVID as well and injuries. You know, January is going to be, could be a difficult month for a lot of clubs, and we could see more postponements. So I don't know whether they thought about this or whatever. But you know, it's going to throw that extra element into the mix a little bit, isn't it? So, but yeah, we head to Brighton on Friday. It's been an interesting week of fixtures, actually. West Ham, Millwall, and Brighton. So, you know, it's been an interesting week for us. I'm going to end it down on the South Coast against Brighton. If we can get something out of that game, then it will have been a good week.
Yeah, not too many travel miles for you the past couple of weeks, but but yeah, obviously playing a couple of rivals back to back is always a little tough on the squad and the bodies, but hopefully you're able to pick up the points there. We'll come to you now, Jake, to talk a little bit about Newcastle. I'm not going to make you talk too much about Trippier because I know that you already wrote an article for that. But just some quick highlights from you and your thoughts on some other potential incomings like Alexander Isak, which would be an absolutely huge name for you to get in January.
Yeah, I think apparently we are trying to get him, although I think that's probably a little bit unrealistic. Today it came out that Chris Wood is a player we're looking at, and that's probably a little bit more in the realistic zone at the moment in our current position. Seemingly the piece that it was in the Telegraph, and it seemed to hint that Burnley weren't totally against it, which confused me a little bit. I thought that they wouldn't really want to lose Chris Wood. He's a player that's always scored double figures for them. They're not scoring a lot of goals. And they'd be selling him to a rival. So I don't know how that really works out. But, you know, if we did sign Chris Wood this week, that would be, I think, a good deal up until the summer. Obviously, then we'd probably want to get a more high-profile name in. But I don't think there's many better that we could get to come in and sort of get us over the line of staying up. So that would be decent. I don't think if we did sign him, I think we'd probably try and get another striker as well. But, you know, be a good signing. It seems the defenders are where they're really targeting. I think they're quite hot on Sven Botman from Lille. They've had several bids going for him. You know, it seems that he wants to come. It seems that Newcastle are quite close to the price. You know, if you're asking me today, I think it's more likely to happen than not. And that'd be quite an eye-catching signing, considering he's a player that Champions League clubs wanted in the past. I think AC Milan wanted him this month, but they're just not going to offer the money that we are. So that would be a really exciting signing. I think they're trying to get Diego Carlos from Sevilla as well, who's another centre-back who's, again, been linked with Champions League clubs.
Yeah, that'd be a huge
Europa League. Exactly. It'd be a good signing. I know he plays mainly left centre-back as well for Sevilla, but he is right-footed. I think the from what I've read, the plan is to bring him and Butman both in and play them together. So that would be an interesting thing if they managed to get it. But I think today, I think Koundé from Sevilla went off injured. So I don't know if they will be able to get him. I don't know if there's a release clause or something, but it seems they're really going for defenders and they want to improve the strikers. So it's going to be an interesting, it's definitely going to be an interesting week. I think they should try and do all they can to get players in before Watford next week. I think there are some small rumours going around that Todd Cantwell could be coming in from Norwich, which would be, you know, I don't think it's really what we need, but I, you know, he's a good young player, and you know, I think maybe if they're trying to bring in players across the pitch, maybe he's a player that Eddie Howe likes. He reminds me of the type of player that he used to sign at Bournemouth, so that would be interesting if he came in. I'm just not really sure where he would fit into the team. It's going to be a really interesting month for Newcastle. I think that we're probably going to sign 5 or 6 players, maybe more. You know, I think yesterday would have only have increased the amount of money we're going to spend this month, not decreased. And teams are going to see us coming as well. Like, for me, if we did sign Chris Wood, I wouldn't want it to be more than 20 million. I think that, you know, a player of his age, I think he's 30. He's probably, I don't think he's got long left in his contract. I wouldn't want us to go more than 20, but I was talking to Jamie today. I was exchanging some tweets, and he sort of seemed to think that would be way too low, and that they would be expecting, I don't know. He didn't give a figure, but it sounded like maybe double that. Which, you know, if Newcastle paid 40 million for Chris Wood, I'd start to worry about what we were doing. But it's going to be interesting. Hopefully, we bring in the right players. Hopefully, we get it done quickly, and hopefully, we do enough to see us stay up. Because if we did stay up this season, even if it was a 17th finish, you know, if we can attract the likes of Botman and Carlos now, and maybe in the summer we might get a whole new caliber of player become interested in a move to Newcastle. So yeah, it'd be definitely exciting times ahead. Whether we go down or not, I'm sure we'll get to a point where we are in the top sort of 6 to 8 of the Premier League, maybe higher. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. It's going to be an interesting month. And I think from when they took over, they thought spoke about maybe spending 50 million in January. I'm sure that's trebled now, but after they've watched what this squad is capable of. But yeah, Trippier is a good start. I think he's a very good signing. And I think it's probably the type of signing that to get in early that will convince others, if they were slightly unsure, that maybe they should join as well. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting month, but I think we're going to sign quite a few players, and I think there's going to be a couple of high profile ones in there as well.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep our ears to the ground for any of those big names potentially coming to join Newcastle. Obviously happened when City got their money, and it'll definitely make sense if you're able to sway some people to join the club that maybe wouldn't have just 6 months ago. Gitto, we'll come to you now. For casual fans that just want Swansea to do well because of their Swans alone years up in the Premier League and stuff, it might come as a surprise that after 2 years of making it into the playoff that you've now dropped pretty far down the table and don't really look like making a run this year. So for those of us that haven't been as keyed into the championship, what have you made of the last few years kind of leading into the Russell Martin era, and what have you made of his early start to his tenure there as your manager?
Yeah, any fans who do want to see Swansea back because they enjoy the kind of Swansea loner football that we played, there's good news and bad news. The good news is that we are trying to get back to playing that style of play after playing a very defensive, more direct and less ambitious, I would say, style of play under Steve Cooper for the last 2 years. So we're trying now to go back to that passing style, the possession-based football, a bit more attack-minded and creative than we were under Cooper. And in fairness, I think Russell Martin has got those messages across to the players, and the style has definitely changed quite a lot under him. The bad news is that we are a million miles away from promotion at the moment. We are in the bottom half of the table. The playoffs look like a very long shot this season, and we are definitely building for the future. But I think this season is sort of in line with expectations, roughly. I think we all knew that it was going to be a bit tougher this time around than it had been the previous years. The parachute payments have now run out, and they were keeping us competitive, although our financial situation meant they were basically being used to make sure that Andre Ayew didn't bankrupt us with his £80,000 a week wages. So it just kept us afloat quite nicely. But now those parachute payments have run out. Andre Ayew's contract has expired too, so he's left the club. As Jay knows, the likes of Mark Gay and other big high-profile Premier League loanees have moved on to the Premier League. And we're having to rebuild, really. And we were also, of course, in an even more difficult position because Steve Cooper, his departure from the club wasn't announced until a fortnight before the start of the season. We didn't get Russell Martin in until less than a week before the season started. So he didn't really have a pre-season. Most of our transfer work was left until the final few days of the transfer window. So we've been on the back foot while trying to, you know, transform things really on the playing side of things. And it's unsurprisingly led to an up and down season. We started quite slowly, built up a decent run of form, got some very good results and some good performances against the likes of Cardiff and West Brom and Peterborough and Coventry. And at one point it did look like perhaps we were going to be capable of making another playoff push. But I think recent results have shown that probably it's just a bit too much of an ask. I think our defensive worries are too severe. We're probably among the easiest teams to play against in the entire division. We leave a lot of space in behind for our opponents. And while watching Swansea this season has been very entertaining because they're always open games, they're always filled with good football. Swansea try to, you know, pass the ball around with quite a brave approach, really, and that we're pretty good at it on the whole. But when we do lose the ball, we play ourselves into a lot of trouble. And it's just clear that we're not ready yet to make that playoff push. There are a lot of exciting pieces in the puzzle, likes of Joel Pirou, who's been signed for just £1 million in the summer from PSV, has been one of the best strikers in the Championship this season, scoring all sorts of goals, and just a great player to watch. Jamie Patterson signed on a free in the summer, possibly in the best form of his career. He's been a revelation. Olivier Cham, bought from Celtic, is just a really classy midfielder who gets us ticking. Flynn Downes is basically the Championship's Declan Rice. He is a brilliant young defensive midfielder who I think is going to be playing in the Premier League within the next few years without any shadow of a doubt. He was excellent against Southampton yesterday and is just generally phenomenal. But there are a lot of pieces then which are missing from this puzzle, particularly at the back. So it's a real mixed picture at the moment. But on the whole, I think fans are generally reasonably positive still and can see that there is hope of a long-term success here. And if Russell Martin can get things to work, then it is going to be very exciting because he is the essence of a Swansea City manager. His philosophies, the way he does things, he's made for this club, really, and we're just all hoping that it does work out.
Gotcha. And like we said, I think a lot of neutrals are also hoping that it works out for you, but yeah, without those parachute payments, you kind of get into the long build version rather than the try to get there as fast as possible. And you know, losing Cooper and all of his connections to the England youth teams and bringing in loans that way obviously brought you success, and now, as you mentioned, a lot of them are back in the Premier League. One of them is staying in the Championship, though, with the Laird recall and then re-loan to Bournemouth. What did you make of all that?
We can't really complain because we did the same thing a couple of seasons ago with Conor Gallagher, who, again, Jay knows very well. But, yeah, Ethan Laird came to us on loan for Manchester United in the summer. Has been very good, a little bit inconsistent due to the fact that he's one of these players who only has one setting. He plays the game at 100 miles an hour, and that does mean that he struggles to control his energy level. So he'll be brilliant one game, the next game he'll look quite tired. But when he's at his best, he's a fantastic young player, really quick, has plenty of skill, contributes, well, was a really important player in an attacking sense, playing at right wing back. It's going to be interesting to see what happens now that Manchester United have recalled him and sent him on loan to Bournemouth. It's a bit of a strange one because he was playing regularly and playing well for Swansea. And I'm not entirely sure that he's going to be playing regularly for Bournemouth on the right wing. So it's a bit of a strange one. But, you know, as much of a blow as it is, you take these risks when you get players in on loan. These things can always happen. We did it two seasons ago, like I mentioned, when Conor Gallagher had been brilliant on loan at Charlton, and we just stole him in January of the same season when Charlton really needed him to stay in the Premier League. And, you know, we know what it's like. It's par for the course when you bring in loan players, and pretty much every club in the Championship knows that is the risk. But, you know, the way things are, especially financially in the Championship these days, loans are a big part of every club strategy, and they're just risks that you have to take. And unfortunately, you know, Ethan Laird has done very well with us, but we're now having to try and find a replacement right wing back, which isn't something that we thought we'd have to do in this transfer window. But there we go. These things happen, I guess.
If you want to put in a cheeky, like, £2 bid for Matt Doherty, you could probably get him off Tottenham. But just a suggestion there. All right, we've hit the hour mark, so I think we'll have to wrap up here. But thanks so much to you guys for coming on today. If you'd like to tell folks where they can find you or anything you've been working on, now's a good time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Kev. It's always a pleasure. Yeah, for anything Palace-related or non-Palace-related, we chat to anybody. We like the interaction with opposition fans. So head over to the Eagles Beak, the website itself. We have articles regularly going up on there, not just about games, but just opinion-based ones as well. You can get us on all across socials at the Eagles Beak, and maybe have a tune into my own community radio sports show every Tuesday evening, 8 o'clock. It's just a couple of guys like down the pub talking sport. That's all it is, and playing great music. So you can catch us on socials for all those details at the Meridian SS.
Thanks for listening. You can get me on Twitter at JakeJackWith2Ns. I write for a variety of websites, all of which I will post about on my Twitter feed.
Thank you very much for having me back. You can find me on Twitter at GitLwill, and you can also find the Jackcast at the Jackcast on Twitter.
Awesome, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. You can find the show on Twitter at EPL Roundtable, and you can find it on all your podcasting sites by searching EPL Roundtable. And as always, you seem to have nailed it if you're listening this far into the show. But thanks again to these guys for joining me, and folks at home, we hope you keep listening.